Welcome back to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. And joining us today, I'm Joel Katz. Joining me today is Dr. Heikki Ustal, attending physiatrist at Hackensack Meridian Health JFK Johnson Rehab Institute, medical director, prosthetic and orthotic team, associate professor at Hackensack Meridian Medical School, and also an adjunct professor at Rutgers University, biomedical engineering. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. How are you doing today, Joel?
Very good. Thank you for asking. You do a lot, and I guess that would makes you you're a national leader in the field of prosthetics.
Well, I try to offer my services to everything that's related to amputation. And just to elaborate briefly on sort of my story here, mm-hmm. my career has been pretty much one big step from my training program here to JFK. I've been here now 36 years, and the focus of my entire career has really been on patients with limb loss, with amputation, or even kids born without a limb, and then fitting them with prosthetic devices and training them and getting them back to as much of their previous activities or maximizing their sort of functional outcome as possible. And then the best part is following them for the rest of their life. And along the way, we have to address things like, you know, return to their self-care activities, you know, dressing, bathing, you know, that kind of routine, mm-hmm. but then also back into the community and back into the fun stuff, which is things like sports and, unfortunately, sometimes work activities, social activities. So all of those things are kind of in the realm of what we want to do to get our patients back to enjoying life and really maximizing their function throughout their entire life.
Mm-hmm. Is there an activity that is more difficult than the rest? That stands out?
Boy, you know, that is sort of an open-ended question. I mean, in the beginning, everything is difficult. I literally, 10 minutes ago, and I'm working, I'm in my clinic area here. We had an older gentleman who just literally received his first prosthetic device last week and is literally taking his first steps, and we had him up in the parallel bars. And to him today, that was extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. In a month, it'll be easier, and then we'll talk about the next things that we want to accomplish, whether it be walking outdoors or return to driving. And then the next things will be he wants to get back to golf. So we take one step at a time, and each one seems very difficult and challenging mm-hmm. at that moment. But once we accomplish that goal, we then move on to the next goal. And the goals get more challenging but more fun usually as we make our way through that sequence.
It's amazing to me. I guess there's many things that amaze me that amputees can accomplish and all the technology and the advances that we have. But when I see somebody running, you're like a double amputee, leg amputee, it's just amazing that they're able to accomplish that and the technology is there for that.
Sure. And it's a combination of several different factors, really. In my career, in my 30-plus years in this field, I've seen this slow evolution of technology, and I guess we can talk about that for a couple of minutes mm-hmm. first, that you know, we see the miraculous things on TV, you know, in the sports activities, and carbon fiber was really the big change that allowed amputees to run almost, you know, as they did prior to their amputation. It's the properties, the physical properties of carbon fiber that it bends and it springs back. Mm-hmm. But to be honest with you, we had that technology 20 and 30 years ago. That's really not that new anymore. We're fine-tuning it a little bit, but those kind of sprinting feet and running feet have been with us now for a while, so it's not unusual. It's not uncommon for our patients to come and say, hey, I want to return to running as part of my program, and if they were able to run before, there's a reasonable chance they will be able to run again after amputation because we have that technology down at the foot level. The next concern is if their amputation involves their knee, then the technology to control the knee for higher level activity, that's also been slowly evolving. You know, we had pretty much, you know, stiff locking knees decades ago, and then we got to the point where we had hydraulic pistons at our knees, and then we have computer control at our knee now, which we've also had for 20, 25 years now. That's also not that new anymore. It is, again, fine-tuning as the years go by. And the durability, the battery life, you know, the technology of how safe they are for walking and for running is all improving steadily. And we now have sort of a new generation of knees that include motors that are going to actually power the knee, sort of push the patient ahead. Where previously the patient relied on just his own muscle power, And for patients with amputation above the knee that had kind of a shorter amputation limb, it was very challenging. But now with this new generation of powered knees, hopefully they will be able to do more and more and kind of keep up or get back to doing what they wanted to do from prior to their amputation. So that slow rolling evolution of technology has been there all along. We now have better interface materials in the sense that your skin, you know, it needs a little bit of protection because you're really trying to put a lot of force through it. So gel liners, you know, materials that give you some cushion and support to then help, you know, do higher level activities with the prosthesis. That's been another big change that we've had that kind of allows us to advance a bit.
Yeah, you mentioned the knees, and I remember when last we spoke, we had a panel of a few different gentlemen, one of them being you, but one of them was an amputee, and he told his story. His name was Joe Edmonston, but he told his story, and I remember the phrase "save the knee." When something happened, it was important to save the knee. Could you explain why that's so important?
Absolutely. We have known for many, many years that it's so much easier to walk with an artificial limb, with a prosthesis, if your amputation is below the knee compared to above the knee. It's huge. The energy cost, how much energy it takes to just walk on a flat surface, is doubled if the amputation is above the knee. Your balance is so much more difficult if the amputation is above the knee. So the message to the surgeons and to the trauma teams has always been, anything you can do to save the knee will make this patient's life so much better for the rest of their life. We can deal with almost any shape amputation limb. And if you have to do some extra work, some kind of reconstruction, move muscles around, anything you need to do to save that knee and have an amputation below the knee is worthwhile trying, because functionally they do so much better. Now, you don't always have that opportunity. Sometimes the disease or the injury is so catastrophic that it has to be above the knee, and then we have, you know, options and alternatives there. But there have been these hallmark strategies of, you know, save the knee. More bone length is important because you have better leverage to control the prosthesis. So we have to work together in conjunction with the surgeons, with the trauma teams, to make sure they understand what's going to help us and help our patients to really maximize their function in the future, because they really do want to get back to doing many of the things they did before. And we just recognize that anything related to running, jumping, longer distance, walking, you know, balance will really require saving that knee and trying to keep the amputation below the knee.
Would you say that most surgeons know that? If there's an accident, for example?
Yeah, I think at this point, most medical centers that have a true trauma team, let's say a level one or level two trauma center, they absolutely, I think, know that. It's part of their training. It's been part of their training. But many times accidents occur farther away from metropolitan areas, and now you're in a local or regional hospital, and it may just be the general surgeon on call that ends up completing or doing the amputation. And that may not be quite so inherently ingrained into their training. But relatively speaking, we hope we're getting the message out. We broadcast it. We talk to our patients. I talk in front of groups of professionals nationally, you know, whether it be physicians that are surgeons, physicians that are rehab specialists, or even other professionals like physical therapists and prosthetists. And we're trying to convey these messages and how they can help us. That way we can help their patients. And even, you know, how they close up the amputation. There are some new surgical techniques now where you take the nerves that remain in that amputation limb and implant those back into a muscle connect them to another nerve to prevent some of those strange phantom sensations or pains that many of our patients get. If surgeons did that every time they did an amputation, our rate of phantom pain would go down dramatically. But it's an additional surgical technique that really has just evolved in the past 10 years. And many surgeons that have been in practice already for some time don't have that training or that experience, or maybe don't want to, you know, take a chance that this might be the first time they're trying to do it. And so of the 100,000 surgeons out there that might encounter a patient that needs amputation, I would say probably 10% of them are familiar and willing to do this new nerve surgery as part of the amputation surgery. We do see it more because we're in a major metropolitan area here in the Northeast, but still, I would say 80%, 90% of my patients still have very traditional amputation surgery done exactly the way it was done 50 years ago. So we're trying to get the message out, but it just takes time. So let's hope that people listening to this will kind of carry on the message that, yes, there is a type of nerve surgery. It's called TMR. It's targeted muscle reinnervation. It was originally designed for sort of other reasons, but it works remarkably well to control that phantom pain that may develop after the amputation surgery is done. And it is something that any good surgeon can learn. So if they're willing to go and get the training and start incorporating this into their practice, that would be spectacular for us and for our patients.
Yeah, interesting. We're talking with Dr. Heikki Ustal, attending physiatrist at Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Johnson Rehab Institute, has been working with prosthetics for decades. Let's talk about sports. I mean, we touched on the running earlier, but there's other sports that JFK Johnson is involved with. What do you want to start
with?
Sure,
absolutely. We have known for years, and we have been intimately involved with return to sports for most of our patients, whether they be younger or a bit older. Golf is a very easy sport to get into or to return to when you have either upper limb or lower limb amputation. And so we have been working together cooperatively with the Eastern Amputee Golf Association for 22 years now, sponsoring a couple of golf events. Our first event in the springtime, which we actually held just last week, is called our First Swing Clinic. It gets patients back. We go to a driving range, and we basically give them some formal instruction from a trainer on how they may have to adapt their stance and their swing related to their amputation, and let them start practicing and hitting golf balls. And last week we had 30 individuals out there with five instructors and physical therapists, myself, and everyone had a chance to get up and kind of practice. Even if you've never swung a golf club, we'll tell you exactly how to hold it, how to swing it. And we had a lot of people that previously had played golf but were just afraid to go out there because they were just afraid to either fall down or embarrass themselves because they haven't had the courage to go back to golf since their amputation. And those people just found it so enlightening and so confidence building to have not only some professionals there to help out, but just to be able to stand there and swing a club and say, hey, I can still do it. And the next part, part two of the story, is that, again, in conjunction with the EAGA, we have a full golf outing in June where we have an entire course. We use the Ross Moore course down in the Jamesburg, and we have a full, collection of teams out there, 18 or 20 teams. Every single foursome has some amputee players and some able-bodied players, and everybody kind of gets to learn from each other. It's remarkable to see how some of the able-bodied players are in awe of the amputee golfers, and then vice versa. The amputee golfers can learn a little bit something from the able-bodied players, and everyone has a good time, and we've also been running that event for 20-plus years. And that just allows them the freedom to go out, and they're not alone. They're out there on a course with, 50 other amputee players. And some of these individuals, both men and women that are amputee golfers, some of them are spectacular at their golf game because they've learned that balance is more important than power. I'm a guy, and I want to hit the ball hard and long, and so I swing really hard, and it goes into the woods. A lot of people do that when they play golf. But yet, once you have an amputation, the focus is away from hitting it long and hitting it hard, now to just maintaining your balance, a good swing. And it's remarkable that you can hit a 180 or 200-yard drive as an amputee right down the middle because you're focusing more on balance and more on skill rather than on power. So that's really encouraging. It's remarkable to see how well some of these players play. So golf is kind of our favorite sport, but we have a bunch of other stuff that we get our patients back into. And we've also known for years that swimming is one of the easiest things to get into because you almost always swim without the prosthesis. And there are tricks and techniques on how to do that. If you have a local pool or a private pool that you own or friends or family, typically the process is you walk up to the edge of the pool, you sit down either on a chair or on the steps of the pool, remove your prosthesis and go swim, and swim without it. If you have only a single limb absent, then swimming is actually pretty easy in the water. The buoyancy of the water allows you to kind of walk or hop around. If you have multiple limb loss, then we may have to restore with some specially designed swimming prostheses, but that's pretty easy. Now, the beach is very different. walking into shallow water and walking out a fair distance at the beach is much more challenging, then you might require a truly waterproof prosthesis that allows you to walk out into the ocean, play around, or wade into a stream to go fishing. So there are a little bit of variations on how people access the water, but swimming in a pool is real easy. And then everyone that was involved in some kind of running activities, whether it be just running for fitness or basketball, soccer, whatever it might be, always has questions about, can I get back to running? Some of it will depend on their level of amputation. If their amputation is below the knee, the answer is almost always yes.
Okay.
If the answer is above the knee, the answer could be maybe, because it's much more difficult. Again, the strength required, the balance required, the technology and the parts of the prosthesis required will make it a little bit more challenging. But straight ahead running for fitness, that's pretty straightforward. We have physical therapists that have also been here for decades that can train our individuals to run. What we recommend is that they then have a shock absorber built into their prosthesis so that the components, the parts, change a little bit depending on your activity. You need a foot that has some what we call dynamic response. It bends, mm-hmm. it flexes, and it springs back. That's typically carbon fiber or fiberglass composite. And then you need this little shock absorber on top, and then running is really just a matter of training and relearning. And then there are cutting and turning sports. Anytime you plant your foot and twist a little bit, the easiest example is tennis and pickleball nowadays, where you're not really running a lot. You're moving back and forth quite a bit, but you're planting and you're twisting. Then the prosthesis needs a rotator, or what we call a torsion control, so that when you plant and twist, that twisting force is not conveyed to your skin inside of the prosthesis. It's absorbed through the parts of the prosthesis. So we have to make sure we understand what the patient's going to return to and design their prosthesis accordingly. And every prosthesis is way more expensive than you expect. And when we start adding on some of these adaptive equipment for sports,
it only
makes it more expensive. And unfortunately, sometimes it makes it even a little bit heavier. So we have to take all of that into account. So cutting and turning sports, we have to use some kind of adaptive equipment. And recently we had an inquiry from a rowing club up at the Passaic River. They are interested in seeing if they can create an adaptive system where people with either upper or lower limb amputation can now resume or get back into a sport like rowing. So we may pursue that this spring and summer and see how that works out. I jokingly commented to one of the gentlemen there. I said, well, most of the time, the biggest risk is that our patient might fall down. You swing a golf club, you lose your balance, you fall down on the grass. Generally, nothing bad happens. In rowing, if you kind of fall into the Passaic River, I have to worry about the $20,000 prosthesis floating away or sinking or something of that sort.
Well, do they float?
Well, yes and no, depending on how they are designed.
Okay.
Some will float, but many will sink. The Passaic River is not clean enough to try to go fetch it either. So, relatively speaking, those are things we have to worry about. How it holds on, what is the risk of, catastrophic events occurring, all those things we take into account for our patient's safety.
And you have to make sure that the patient is able to swim in case they fall in the water. I mean, I guess they would have a life vest on.
Yeah, the hallmark. And I'll throw in a comment here that, surprisingly, one of the more difficult activities to return to in the sports realm is bowling.
Okay, I was going to ask you which one would be the hardest. Okay, so bowling would be most difficult for what reason?
Well, because the process of bending down, and when you're releasing the ball, you're not standing upright. As you approach that line to release the ball, you're slowly bending down, and that controlled bending is actually very difficult because the prosthetic foot may not bend exactly the way your toes bend. Certainly, if you have an amputation above the knee, getting that knee to bend exactly the way you would have your native knee bend is actually remarkably challenging. So we've had so many patients come back, and they kind of tried on their own to resume their favorite sport, which was bowling, and they really had to, find some real challenging maneuvers and how they're going to do that. So we've actually started to think carefully about how do we design a prosthesis for someone that wants to return to bowling, particularly when you have amputation either below the knee or, more importantly, above the knee. So So that was a little bit of a shock or a surprise to us.
What about an upper
And
limb? When it comes to upper limbs with bowling, I would think that would be most difficult, gripping, releasing the weight of the ball.
yeah, so there are both body-powered upper limb prostheses where you're using cables that are controlled by moving your shoulders, and then there are electronically controlled prostheses. And believe it or not, there are lots of adaptive parts that you can literally plug into the end of an arm prosthesis. There's always a wrist unit, a mechanical wrist, that acts as a connector for the hand. Now you can unplug or remove the hand and plug in other stuff. So there is adaptive equipment. In fact, there are two
Okay.
different companies that have a
It's
catalog
amazing.
that has just pages and pages of adaptive equipment that they have come up with for return to lots of different sports and activities. There's one that's a very simple, sort of a hand that has no fingers. We call it a mitt design. So it slides inside of a baseball glove or a hockey mitt. And then there's a very large one that almost looks like a giant overextended fingers that's meant to hold and grasp a basketball. And then a smaller one that's a very carefully, precisely designed cup that holds a baseball so that as you're throwing it at a certain velocity or throwing speed, it releases and lets go automatically. So there's this kind of adaptive equipment. And yes, someone has come up with a adaptive piece that plugs into an arm prosthesis that fits into the hole of a bowling ball. Now, how reliable it is and learning to use it is actually kind of tricky to master. But there are companies and there are people out there that have been thinking about any number of sports and recreational activities. There are camera mounts and gun mounts and archery pieces and swim
Sure.
fins, any number of things that will plug into or connect to an arm prosthesis for any number of sports, for weightlifting, for bodybuilding, for tumbling, for martial arts. There's typically some kind of a simple sort of adapter that plugs into the prosthesis. So even though holding onto the ball and releasing the ball with an arm prosthesis would seem to be a very challenging concept for us, someone has helped us overcome that by basically designing a very elegant, adaptive piece that goes inside of the hole of the thumb hole, typically of the bowling ball, that basically simply expands or contracts a little bit to release it. Now, again, it takes practice. It's not easy, but it's
Sure. Well,
doable.
anything
But it's
does.
really the body position of getting down to the ground, guiding the ball, putting that little bit of twist on it, if you like. That's the tricky part, and that's the part we're still working on.
Yeah, and I've seen archers use their feet. Champion, world champion archers. I'm sure you're familiar, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, we learned half a century ago when thalidomide was a commonly used drug that caused, unfortunately, birth defects with missing arms,
Right.
sometimes one, sometimes both. That generation then showed us that you can use your feet to do almost anything.
Yeah.
And there were some stars, really, in that generation of individuals that could literally, with no arms, walk into a room, hop over to the counter, pour themselves a cup of coffee with one foot while balancing on the other, add the cream, add the sugar, sip the coffee, hop over to a chair, sit down, and very reasonably sit in a chair and use one foot to drink their coffee while sitting at a table with a bunch of friends. That level of skill is something that can be accomplished, but just takes an enormous amount of training, and that's where the rehabilitation comes in, where the rehab is oftentimes as important or more important than the technology or the parts that you get. Both are critical, but both have to be carefully considered and addressed. Someone that gets a very high-tech leg that's not trained to use it properly really is not going to get the most out of it, and vice versa. Someone that has access to great training but doesn't have access to good technology or good parts may not get the most out of their training program. So it's got to be a little bit of both.
I'll tell you what, we're gonna have to have another talk because we're out of time, and this just flew by. I find this so interesting, and I don't think we even scratched the surface of the things that amputees, upper or lower, can do with the technology and with everything that people like you are creating.
Well, that's what we like to say is that if we look at your previous level of function, and our goal is really to always try to get you back as close as we can to that previous level, and then we come up with whether it be strategies, training skills, components, adaptive equipment, that's our job. That's really my
Yeah, you
job is
do a
to
great
figure
job.
out how to get to that end goal.
Dr. Heike Ustal, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me again.
Dr. Heike Ustahl, attending physiatrist at Hackensack Meridian Health JFK Johnson Rehab Institute. We thank him again for joining us on the program. If you want more info, go to jfkmc.org, or for a podcast of this show, go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health is brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. Until next week.